Welcome, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I am so happy to have you join us. Today, my guest is Anne Elizabeth. Anne and I dish about living off the land, pursuing media ventures, making friends in the virtual space, and, as Anne likes to say, embracing the hell yeah. Anne is a registered dietitian whose passions include writing, wellness, and, of course, food. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Good morning and welcome, Anne Elizabeth. Thank you so much for giving me your time. I'm very grateful and honored to have you on the Dish with Dina podcast.
Oh, Dina, thank you so much I'm very excited to be part of this awesome adventure that you're doing.
Aw, thank you. We are going to launch right in to my two famous questions now. We're going to take two trips down memory lane. The first one is explaining to our listeners the question is usually, how did we meet? In our case, you and I never actually met in person. We're more virtual friends and colleagues. Do you remember how we crossed paths, when the first time was that maybe we heard of each other?
What I go back to is through Instagram. We connected. I think we became friends. I can't quite exactly remember what we connected over, because it's been a few years since we kind of connected. But that's I think I saw something that you had posted and I commented and I loved it. And then we've kind of been fast virtual friends since then.
Indeed. Not just friends, supporters of each other, which I think you'll agree too, because I believe we're both in some of the same dietetic practice groups, like in particular, nutrition entrepreneurs, where we're all very collaborative and very supportive of each other. And I think what I'll add in there is, I might have mentioned to you when we did first cross paths that I have been a stalker / fangirl of yours for quite some time. I knew you before I met you, because I actually purchased your book when I became a registered dietitian. I purchased your book that you had authored a few years ago, called I'm a Registered Dietitian, Now What? And it really helped me understand what the next steps should be now that I have this career. So I'm very grateful for you for that.
Oh, that makes me happy. You know, It's like, you never see, like, when you do a book, you never see who it reaches out to, because it's such a physical, personal thing. So I thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. Yeah,
absolutely. And then the other thing we have in common too is you were gracious enough to also ask me on your own podcast, which is Conversations with Anne Elizabeth, a couple of years ago, when I was still kind of navigating the first year, or I was coming out of my internship. I can't remember. I just remember saying I was sleepy all the time. And that was the theme of my conversation with you.
Well, and I think you had like six different jobs at the time, and you were doing all these volunteer positions, and I was in complete awe of all the things that you were doing. So I totally understood why you were sleepy, but I also was, I was just amazed by everything that you were making happen.
Yes. I think I've still held those six random jobs up until, as I'm explaining to a lot of the listeners now, these early stage episodes that we're doing these interviews are during the pandemic. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on. And namely, I've lost a lot of the jobs that I was doing. So I've gotten the time to make a podcast at this point. before we launch into who you are now and, you know, kind of how you became who you are, the second trip down memory lane is finding a little bit more about people's earliest childhood food memories, cultural backgrounds, family food dynamics. Can you share with us a little bit about how you grew up and where you grew up and how food was playing a part back then?
Sure. You know, that's funny that, you know, going back that far, because I'm a little bit older of an individual, but probably my first kind of food memories, when I was younger, I remember probably being 3 or 4, and we had lived in Hawaii at the time. My dad was in the Air Force, and that's kind of my first food memories, because everyone loved to come visit us, all of our family, because we lived in Hawaii. So when, you know, friends and family would come, we would kind of prepare for them. And my parents would, they had bikes, and we would go pick pineapples and get coconuts. And we had a banana tree in our backyard and a papaya tree. So those are kind of my first, you know, being interested in food outside of just the normal eating dinner. But those were like adventures, and those were like things that we did for people that were coming to visit us. And that was fun because, I mean, a lot of people don't have those experiences. But then I moved to Iowa when I was 6. And so that was a complete shift in food culture, was being in the middle of America and being in farming communities. So then it shifted to, my grandpa was a farmer. He farmed crop and some livestock and, you know, corn and beans, and we butchered chickens and, you know, smoking meat after we butchered a pig. And it was very, it was just a very vast change in kind of food for what I remember as early, early child to growing up in a farming community. So that's probably the shift. But then, it, you know, it's, we being in that farming community, you know, dinner time was a very important time in our family. We always had dinner as a family. There was no TV. There was no phone calls. There was conversation. Mm-hmm. And my mom always likes to laugh that she's like the original dietitian, which kind of makes me laugh because she didn't even know what a dietitian was until I became one. But she was very my plate meal planner. She had all the components of my plate every time we ate. So we always had a protein. We always had a starch. We always had a fruit and a vegetable and a dairy. And it was always perfectly portioned, which may be a little cuckoo, but looking back on that, but she very much was, she kind of was the OG dietitian in my life.
That is so funny that you call her that, because I think I might have explained in either one of the earlier episodes or my intro, I used to call my dad the OG garden, like organic gardener, and because we had the backyard, we had tomato plants, we had basil growing, and he was always tending to something. Now, in the farming, well, let me go back for a sec, because in Hawaii, this also reminds me from a lot of the people who I've interviewed before who were islanders, they, exactly like you said, it's not necessarily food in their backyard, but they had access to food just off the land. Like you can walk around and just pick things off the land. And I heard that also from one of my former professors whose parents grew up in Greece. When they then came to America, thought to themselves, I don't understand why we have to pay for produce when I used to pick this off the tree on the sidewalk. And that's completely... you know, I've never been in that situation where you can just have at whatever's available literally on the land that you don't have to pay for anything. So that's quite an interesting concept too. And then forwarding to the farming discussion, is it fair to assume, like you were saying, you were able to help out your grandpa too, like when you were doing, or at least be near him and kind of watch the process of farming?
Absolutely. So we would go in the fall, we would go combining with him. We'd get a ride in the combine and we'd get to kind of see the process of, you know, combining the corn and the beans, and then also just, you know, transporting it and riding in the tractors as we were little kids. And then, for some reason, they thought it was a great idea for us city girls. My dad was not a farmer. I lived in a small town and I was a town girl, is what they called us. There was the farm girls and the town girls. So I lived in town. And so my grandparents thought it'd be a good idea for me to, and my sister, to be a part of some of those farming practices. So butchering chickens was something that they thought we should definitely be a part of as we got older, which was, oh my gosh, I don't think I ate chicken for probably a whole year afterwards, but I got over it. And then just like too, we would, in our freezer, we would have half a cow, we would have half a pig that we would share with our families, and it was grown on the farm and it was butchered locally and it was, you know, gotten from a locker. So going to a grocery store and actually buying meat and livestock, that's not something we did. We just got it from directly from my grandparents or from my uncle who also farmed.
That is, now I'm thinking for, I teach an undergrad class called Food Society and Health. And we, in that, we talk about like the childhood experience and how I think in the current traditional American way, we don't really have that experience. And so for both you and I, both having, you know, the backyard garden, and for you, the farming experience, and actually being able to kind of honor and value and respect how and where we get our food from, or at least be included in that process, I think really does play a role in how we treat food going forward, where I'm seeing sometimes, you know, children. And again, it depends on food accessibility and the issues at hand that just, you know, are especially in certain neighborhoods. I'm in New York City. There's a lot of underserved communities there too, that children don't even know how to recognize certain fruits and vegetables because they've never seen them before. So to start out at such a young age and being able to have that truly hands-on experience, I think really helps develop us to become more respectful of food, but also foodies. Like, we're more open to maybe eating and learning about different types of foods and different kinds of traditional ways and how to season things, how to cook things at such an early age.
Absolutely. I agree. Because, you know, even outside of the farming culture, my grandpa always even had a huge garden on the farm where, you know, there was asparagus that was probably there for 200 years prior, you know, who knows how long it had been there, but it had been there for a super long time. And, you know, what 5-year-old really knows what asparagus is, you know, exactly. When, you know, like go to the bunch, go to the garden, get some asparagus, and being 6 or 7 years old and being able to go know what it is, pick it and bring it back.
Yeah.
Thinking about that, that now that you say that, like, that's an amazing thing that I got to experience, that a lot of people don't have that opportunity.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's funny because for me at the time, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that.
I was
making me run chores.
Yeah, I didn't go hoe the garden. I didn't want to hoe the garden and pick the weeds. That is not what I wanted to do with my afternoon as a 10-year-old. Thank you.
Right. Right. And now looking back, I long for the days of living on the land and being able to cultivate my own foods and not be so reliant on all this stuff.
I know.
Too funny.
Isn't that crazy how you want to go back to the things that you dreaded as a child, but now you only could wish for them now?
Yeah. And I think, well, I think for me, so this is where I'm kind of going with now in the next question I'm about to ask. For me, I definitely know that that shaped my behavior, both pros and cons. There were definitely some things that I enjoyed learning and learning how to cook. And everybody was always in the kitchen. There was always enough food to feed a small army. And much like you were saying too, when family came to visit, you know, it wasn't just, oh, let's go out to eat someplace. No, we created a meal for everyone, many meals for everyone. And that's really what got me interested in culinary stuff. I had wanted to originally pursue the culinary field and become a chef of some sort or open a restaurant. And as, you know, things happen, your life sometimes veers in a different direction, but I did still end up utilizing food in some way in how I eventually became a dietitian, and some of those, you know, food demos and things that I was doing when I was speaking to you during your podcast interview with me about doing those hands-on CSA, you know, little volunteer things that I was doing in my own community. That still plays a role because I really enjoyed having my hands in food, literally. And figuratively. Yeah. So walk me through then, did any of what you were learning back then, again, positive or negative experiences, kind of create a path for you to academic, professional, you know, personal, how you ventured in the next stages of your life?
Sure. That's a really good question because I was thinking about that the other day, and my mom and I had talked about it numerous times of like how I transitioned into health, like healthcare. And that's kind of where I tended to kind of lean towards as I've gotten in deeper into school and into high school. And I kind of had this whole idea that I just wanted, again, to help people. I think as dietitians, we have gotten to that point where we're like, I just want to help people. And probably in high school, I was leaning towards more of the medical side and kind of thinking I wanted to do med school and become a doctor. And I loved kids. Like, babysitting was my jam. I babysat like the whole neighborhood where I lived. And I really loved hanging out with kids. And so I thought, oh, I think I want to be a pediatric doctor. And that's kind of where I thought as a graduate of high school, where I would kind of end up, and chose my college accordingly, that was going to have a good medical school opportunity. And that's where, you know, I didn't really, but you know, it's funny, I really didn't do any experiences like in the medical field. I didn't like go volunteer. I didn't like work in the medical field. I waitressed and I babysat. So I don't know how that got me to like, hey, I want to work as a doctor somewhere. But I think, and then as far as the food component, you know, I didn't really think about food at all growing up. Like, food was never something that was on the forefront of my mind. I mean, I was hungry and I ate, and that was, you know, my mom always had food. We would help prepare food, but she mostly would make the food. We would be the cleanup crew. So that was kind of our role. in the house was cleaning the dishes and making sure that we helped out that way. But I never really, food wasn't an issue. And then in college, it wasn't something I even thought about. And when I was kind of going through school and thinking medical school, I was like, oh, I should probably take a nutrition class because, you know, doctors, they do a lot in nutrition because they're helping people be healthy. And yeah, little did I know that doctors do nothing in nutrition. And that is where nutrition came on my radar. I took a nutrition 101 class and I was like, this is really awesome. And then I kind of went back to thinking about how my mom was like making our food and it was healthy and I always had energy and I always felt good. And I never, you know, I didn't struggle with my weight all that much. And I did, you know, sports. And so it just kind of, I think that class is what clicked everything for me as far as what led me into dietetics. And that's where I completely changed my course of action as a junior in college and finished out my biology degree and sought out that dietetics degree.
I've heard similar stories from friends of mine who I either had internships with or I've come to know by being a preceptor for interns that they started off in either a pre-med or a nursing field. And then once they got that nutrition course, they thought, oh my gosh, I really want to go in this direction to help kind of prevent potential diseases or help manage disease in a different way than just medicine. And so that's your aha moment as well in that way, which I love. So it sort of, you know, no pun intended, it sort of came organically once you got in that mix and that little light bulb went off and said, I'm going to switch gears. But I do love that you're like, I babysat and so I'm a pediatric doctor. You know,
just totally logical, right? Like, oh, I'm a babysitter. I can care for children in their, you know, most medical necessary issues. So oh silly. Gosh. And I honestly, like looking back, I'm like, I was not cut out for medical school. And I think about like, if I would go back now, I would never be a pediatric doctor. You are always on call. You always have to see. So no way. I would be like a pathologist or a dermatologist. I would never go into pediatrics.
I've said the same thing about the culinary discussion. When I look back at it now, I'm thinking I would never want to be running a restaurant. They don't sleep. They work every single day. I don't know if I would really be cut out for that, you know, back of house lifestyle. So listen, I always say, there are no coincidences in life. We are exactly where we should be. Everything is meant to be. And from this stage too, we have the ability to grow and develop our careers or professions in the way that we see is appropriate for us. And that's also why I wanted to speak to you, because you do have kind of a lot of different roles within the dietetics field. So for anybody who is listening to this, who is currently a student in nutrition, who is currently an intern working, you know, doing their rotations and internship, and they're not entirely sure where to go, I think both you and I have that common skill set that we can do a lot of different things and show people that there are opportunities, not just clinical settings, that we can expand and grow our field, our profession. We can be non-traditional dietitians. So will you tell us a little bit? And again, granted, we're in a pandemic, so maybe a current day in the life of you is not exactly what a normal day in the life of you, but can you tell us a little bit about where you are now and kind of how you got to be doing whatever it is that you feel like sharing with us and whatever, you know, channel that you're working in the field of dietetics.
Sure. Currently I am, my full-time job is I am a retail dietitian. So I work in a grocery store setting, which I've been in for the past almost 12 years, which is crazy to think that I have been doing that long. And then in my other dietitian world, which is kind of my off retail hat, is I'm a podcaster. Mm-hmm. I kind of tout myself as just like a dietitian cheerleader, because kind of when I was navigating the dietitian field, I really didn't have anyone. There just wasn't people that I could talk to about becoming a dietitian or bouncing ideas off of, or just kind of getting introduced into the field. And so I always told myself that I was going to be that person for anybody who needed it later in life. And so that's kind of who I think I am now. Maybe it's a mentor, maybe it's just a cheerleader, maybe it's just someone to be there for anyone that has questions about being a dietitian, becoming a dietitian, and surviving and continuing to be a dietitian and not stopping. Like, that's kind of the person that I have tried to be.
And I would vouch for that because, especially through your podcast, Conversations with Anne Elizabeth, you do focus primarily on the dietitian's story or the interns. Like, you have a lot of various people that are on there, but it's mostly in that realm. But sometimes you do have other people too. Like, if I'm not mistaken, did you have a farmer on one time or something? Yeah.
Yeah. And a chef. So kind of, you know, I feel like all those things kind of connect us. Like, as dietitians, we're connected to farmers, we're connected to personal trainers, we're connected to chefs. Just like you kind of, I would say you have that huge connection to culinary. So we have those crossovers. And I think it's good to put that out there so people can think about it, explore it, maybe take a different avenue in their career, or just know that it's available.
And going back to the retail dietitian position, which I think is really great. I'm from New Jersey and New York. So New Jersey has ShopRite, and ShopRite, I know for a fact, has on-site retail dietitians. And then where you are, that's an on-site position as well. But for anyone listening to this, that's also a great thing that you can pitch to your local retail chain, if you want to, your supermarkets, to be an on-site dietitian. Is it fair to assume that people know you're there, or is there promotion of, you know, please go see our retail dietitian or our on-site dietitian if you have questions about whatever, a condition that you're managing, the foods that we have in-house, label reading, like what's a day in life of you there in that sense?
So yes, I think it's been kind of a work in progress. I would say that I probably came in when retail dietetics was kind of becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, promoting the in-store dietitian has been the trickiest like thing to try to figure out, because I still have people, I feel like in our area, we're pretty well known as being available in the grocery stores, but there are still people that are like, oh, I didn't know there was a dietitian here. So still always a con. And I think that's for all dietitians. We have to promote the crap out of ourselves, because people they just don't know we exist and don't know what we can do, even outside of a retail setting. So, but yeah, a day in the life of a retail dietitian it starts out one way and probably goes 17 different directions, because you're there for the customers. So that's the primary purpose. So you don't know, you maybe will have an idea of what customers you may be seeing, you know, if they've called and scheduled or if they've talked to you previously, but I've had people come from the hospital, drive out of the hospital parking lot and say they just had a heart attack and they need help finding low sodium foods. So it just really depends on what my community needs. It's a very community-based kind of role, because you know, your grocery stores are different in different pockets of different neighborhoods and different communities. So you really have to get to know what the need is of your community, and then that's how you serve your community and help them out and meet them where they're at their wellness journey. So it could be a heart attack, but it could also be just someone that's trying to find the healthiest cookie for their 3-year-old that'll only eat cookies.
Right. And I think you make a great point there that a lot of times, you know, when we come into the field or into whatever profession we're in with a lot of ideas of how we want to, as you said before, I want to help people. I want to help them get better. I want to, you know, encourage them to have healthful habits and so on, that we might have our own agenda in place, but it's really about understanding the needs of the community, either collecting data from that or sending out a survey of some sort, or kind of just watching and learning and looking at their habits and where you can play a role in helping them with whatever their concerns or their issues are. And then that's where you see that person that's the conduit for them to health, regardless of how long it takes them to get there, you know, small steps and so on, but at least you're playing a role in there, which I absolutely love. So thank you for being that person in your community.
It's pretty fun. I have to say you meet some really interesting people that you never would get to meet in your entire life. And those conversations are fantastic. So I've had a blast doing this job.
And then the other thing that we have in common too is the media. I have a BA in communication. This is also where a lot of this podcast, you know, ideas have come from. I have a YouTube channel. I love being in speaking engagements and being hired to do things like that. But also as an adjunct lecturer, you know, I play a role of delivering information. You also have a lot of media experience too, but not necessarily, like that's not a degree that you had, correct? Like you found your way into that. Tell us a little bit about that too, because you have some titles there as well, which is kind of nice. Yeah.
It's funny because I worked clinical before I went into retail. So I was in clinical for 7 years. And clinical, for those of you that do clinical or have not done clinical, there's not a lot of media involved. You're pretty much working with patients. You don't do a lot of cooking or anything like that. It's just taking care of patients. And so when I took this job, I had no idea that I was going to be thrown on TV. I had no idea that I would be doing, speaking engagements. And I kind of got tossed into that. They did do some training, but it wasn't like anything leaps and bounds. So probably I would love to see some of my media spots from, 2009, because I'm sure now they're the change is just crazy. But yeah, so doing just being a resource also in the community as a media expert in nutrition, that's kind of the role that I've taken on in my community. And then as well, just speaking engagements. That was something that, you don't do a lot of speaking as a clinical dietitian either. So honing in on those skills, I took speech like everybody has to do in college, but that was it. So learning how to talk to a crowd of 500 people, just for my job, but then also branching that off into being the president of the Iowa Academy and then serving those members, as well as doing speaking engagements for that, and then also doing speaking engagements for my own podcast and my book. That's just kind of something that it didn't come natural whatsoever, because I feel like you are such a natural speaker and communicator. That's something that I love about you. It just flows so well, and I never feel like that happens for me. So I do gain a lot of knowledge just from listening to you and your conversations and your YouTube videos, because that's how I learned, is watching people who I thought were really good at those skills.
Well, first of all, thank you. Secondly, let me peel back the curtain for a minute, because as I shared with you as we were getting on this podcast interview, I get sick to my stomach. I am a nervous wreck. I may seem somewhat seamless. And also, I will say there's a fearlessness factor that I always encourage in people. Like, just do it. Who cares? Whatever. Make a mistake. Move forward with it. But I will definitely share with you and whoever's listening to this that, yeah, I will do my 20-second take before I think I've landed what I feel is a good clip of something, and maybe throw up a little bit in my mouth or outside. So as long as it comes across like I look like I know what I'm doing, I
You
really
do.
appreciate that.
You
And
totally do.
it's funny because in my first undergrad, the BA in communication, I had speech classes, I had public speaking classes. As I said, I'm from New Jersey, but I'm from a part of New Jersey that is very close to New York. And if I allow myself, I can talk like this if I want to. So I tried to maintain kind of like a nondescript accent at all times. But if I get riled up, or if I'm speaking very quickly, or I'm in familial conversations or friend conversations, my Jersey girl comes out for sure. For sure. And what I like about you were saying too is, that also plays to your passion of the writing and the speaking. And you have the blog, you have, which I will link to all of these things in the episode of what we're doing here. I'll link to your social media account and so on. But you have your website, and do you focus on certain topics and themes when you're writing that? Do you have a collection of ideas that you tend to, just keep scribbling down, or do you focus on the wellness awareness thing of the month? How do those ideas kind of come to you, if people who are interested in doing blog writing or, anything, and captions on their media, social media?
Sure. Well, and I never touted myself as, I always am I in awe of all these beautiful food photos and things that people create and dietitians. I always claimed I wasn't a chef. I am not good in the kitchen whatsoever. So I always kind of thought, well, what could be my angle? What could be the thing that I could provide? So kind of going back to that, being a mentor, being someone that can like be a cheerleader, I'm very inspirational probably in what I write. I've had a lot of things happen in the last probably 5 years of my life, and kind of like you, like just do it. Who cares? Who cares what people think? And I kind of have the mantra of embracing the hell yeah. Like, I'm going to say, if I say I'm going to do something, it's got to be 100% hell yeah. And if it's not, then it's 100% hell no. So that's kind of like my take on any decisions I make in my life and any decisions I make with my my business or my, you know, my blog and my writing. It's what am I feeling? What is that embracing the hell yeah feeling like this week to me? And that's kind of how I,
right.
And of course, like what's going on in the world, what's kind of going on in my life. If I'm experiencing it, someone else is probably too. So that probably will connect with someone at some point. So it always comes back to being a dietitian or being in that nutrition field, but it mm-hmm. also incorporates some sprinkles of real life, kind of real deal type attitude.
I love that. I think that's such a powerful message. And especially for anybody, again, who's listening to this, who might be going into the world of dietetics, or for anybody really who's developing a career path for themselves and not entirely sure where they see themselves going, or perhaps are being denied the opportunity to advance in some way, or feeling like they have to commit to entry level and stick out that, you know, 2 years until I can move on and get the heck out of this place, to kind of go back to what are my true tenets and my goals and my mission in life. And if somebody's offering me something, can I say hell yeah to that? Or does it become something that I have this visceral reaction where, you know, much like me when I'm starting off with the conversations, getting sick to your stomach. If that's something that doesn't, in my case, it's excitement. I'm excited mm-hmm. about doing something. If someone else is getting sick to their stomach because they cannot deal with going to the same place all the time or working in the same environment or being berated in some way because they feel that's the necessary thing that has to be accomplished before they can move to the next step, then please say hell no. And trust mm-hmm. me when I say your friends and your peers and your colleagues who support you will have your back and help you navigate into a different direction, because we don't want people sticking around in hell no land for very long.
Absolutely. I just had a conversation with a dietitian who she kind of felt like she needed to get some clinical experience. So she decided to take a maternity leave position, you know, just to kind of fill in. And 2 weeks in, she knew it was a big fat hell no. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, I shouldn't quit because this makes me look weak. And I was like, no, it doesn't. No, it does not. You mm-hmm. just can't do things that you know are not a good fit for you, because it's just going to tax the rest of your life. It's going to tax your body. It's going to tax everything about your desire to even be want to be a dietitian. So don't do that to yourself. So I love that. Don't be in that hell no space. It's yeah. not worth it.
Absolutely. And that's a good point there too. Don't stick it out just because you think it's what's supposed to happen. If you need to get out of something, get out of something, because especially those of us in the wellness field, we do want to somewhat lead by example, I would think. So to not have that self-care component, to allow yourself to be in that world of feeling like this isn't a good fit, but I'm just going to ride it out. No, cut the ties if you right. can. If you can, you know, again, yes. understanding financial issues, et cetera, I totally get it. But I do feel like a lot of people stick to things just because of fear, or they think it's what they're supposed to do.
And mm-hmm. even in relationships or mm-hmm. living situations, mm-hmm. or it doesn't have to be your profession, but looking at your whole life and say, what are these things that I'm doing that do not fulfill me and that do not make me scream hell yeah, because that is all contributes to how you are successful and how you find happiness. So, and you know, I will say I was in a terrible marriage for a long time, but it took me a while to figure out how to get out of it and how to start really living my life. And once I did that, my career was better. I mean, everything right. was better. So right. it may not just be the job that you're in. It might not be the thing that might not be the big thing that you don't like. It could be something else that is making you not like your job or making you not like a situation you're in. So kind of look at the big picture.
Absolutely. That's very powerful. And thank you for sharing such a personal anecdote in there too. It's a very powerful statement of other things could be holding you back. So, you know, we have many different factors that we have to deal with. And so hopefully you'll find some balance in some way that presents to you once you've peeled away all those things that are maybe holding you back or feeling tied down or not making you feel like to be your truest self or your most genuine self. Opportunities come your way once, right? With the I have that visual in my hand. I can't remember who said this about when your fists are closed, nobody can hand you the gift because, you know, your hands are closed in that way. So you have to kind of open everything up, let that stuff go, and allow people to place their opportunities or gifts in your hand so you can receive them.
Ooh, I like that.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. So, Anne, let's jump ahead a little bit here as far as, you know, the future you, what you're doing right now and what you plan to do? Is that much different? Do you have a typical thing that you're doing right now that you want to continue doing? Do you have more of an ideal version of yourself in the years to come? Do you have any, professional development things that you're looking towards in, say, the next 5, 10, 20 years? I don't know. I tend to plan till the end of my times.
That doesn't know if surprise other people... me, Dina. You're so good about that. I think I probably need to think a little bit farther ahead, but I think probably, when I think about nutrition, I think about things that interest me in nutrition. I really, really like that integrative nutrition side. And I probably, if I'm going to hone in on some skills, that's probably the area I'll end up doing it in. Mm-hmm. I just haven't figured out, I haven't navigated like what's the best route for that. So any insight in that, if anyone's listening, shoot me an email because I need some help figuring out, what kind of certification would be a good one or what kind of classes would be good to take, because I really want to do the right thing and get down the right path if I do that and spend some time on that. So I definitely will keep doing the podcast. I love having conversations with dietitians, and there are so many of us out there that I just feel like I'm seeing this really small part of the world. So I really need to be opened up to more dietitians in the whole world. So again, if there's someone listening and wants to be part of the podcast because you want to share your story, I would love to have you on. I think it would be amazing, and I'm open to anything and anyone. So that definitely will be part of the plan. Definitely will probably have some more book writing. I need to revise my current book. So I'm kind of in the beginning processes of that. So we'll kind of work on that. And there might be a part two. We'll see.
I love it.
Yeah. And then as far as my retail job, that kind of role has changed a little bit. I'm kind of excited about where that's going to go. There's not quite a huge definition where that's going to go right now, but I'm excited to see what the future holds with that.
That is so exciting. And I agree with what you're saying about the interviewing of any person anywhere. We all have a story to share. I mean, I think anybody thinks to themselves, oh, I'm nobody special. Well, nobody's anybody special. We all are just having and sharing our backgrounds and our experiences that may resonate with somebody out there listening. And that's really what the effect is not worrying so much about, the Dish with Dina platform, but considering who out there might listen to your message and think, oh my gosh, she's speaking to me and she's making a difference with me. And that tiny little nugget of information would never have gotten out if, you as the general public person who thinks they don't have anything to say, didn't take a chance and just, step up and tell your story somewhere.
So true. So true. And that's such a good point too, because even if there's one person that gets one thing out of any conversation that I've had or you've had with your guest, then you've done your job. You've done exactly what you set out to do.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to go back for a second about the integrative conversation we just had, just for anyone who might be listening. In the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, there, if you are a member of that, that's kind of like the membership place that a lot of us are a part of, that there are dietetic practice groups within that. So one of them is the Dietitians in Integrative and Functional Medicine. That's a dietetic practice group that has a little specialty section there. I'm not sure, there might be something called the Integrative and Functional Nutrition Academy, where that's obviously you have to pay for it. And it's like many, many modules, but you can get certification in something like that. So, and not exactly sure if that's something that you are moving towards in that direction, but just as an FYI, those are the resources that I can think of off the top of my head for anybody who's looking
in
there.
Heard of the Academy. I have to explore that a little bit more.
Yeah. So as far as go-to resources, what do you do, watch, listen to keep current? Is there anything that you enjoy having in your own daily routine or weekly routine? Do you watch all these bazillion newsletters coming from? I've like literally signed up for every newsletter everywhere and I just cannot keep up, but I do skim things because I like to keep current for my teaching. For my grad class, we talk about current hot topics. So do you have any specific resources? I know you've gone to FENCY, right? That's the Food Nutrition Conference and Expo. You've gone to that. Anything like that too, that you tend to make sure you regularly go to network or to keep current in things?
I definitely try to go to my state organization, any meetings. We have a local, outside of the state, we even have districts in our neck of the woods. So I live in Des Moines, Iowa, which is the capital of Iowa, and we have a district academy association. So we get together, quarterly, and I try to make sure that I am always a part of that because it makes no sense not to be part of a local dietetics group. And in my head, it's like, it's just like, that's just what you should do. So I do make sure that I attend local events. I do attend Fency. As far as nutrition world, I think my customers keep me current on trends just because even if I'm not researching things, I'm getting questions about things that I need to research. So I kind of let it up to my customers to keep me on the trends. I mean, they definitely keep me in the loop of what's being talked about on TV and on radio or whatever they're listening to, reading in newspapers. I'm not a big like TV watcher. I listen to podcasts a lot. So I try to keep up on just things that interest me, but I also listen to like Dateline. So I have to have some balance of some different things. Cause again, our time is precious. Like you said, you subscribe to all these newsletters and you just don't have time to keep up on everything. And one thing that's always a given for me every day is I meditate every morning for a minimum of 10 minutes just to get my mindset in a good place. That's something that I have found that's worked really well for me because it gets me to calm down and not freak out about the day until I actually need to. So that's kind of a non-negotiable in my morning. And then just making sure that I try to be as physically active as possible because that helps me, gives me time to think. So I go on walks often and that's where I get creative. And that's when I think about things, about what I want to do and how I can kind of plan out things. And that's my kind of office time in my head.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I totally know what you're saying. I've done that too, where I think, where am I? Like, I was walking around this block and my brain just went boop. I do that in the shower a lot too. I've shaved like, you know, one leg twice and the other one never.
Yeah, I think I've done that too. Or like forgot to wash my face and then like not brush my teeth and then go to work. I've done that a couple times.
It's good that we have creative juices flowing at all times. It's bad that we have creative juices flowing at all
times. I know.
Oh gosh. And Elizabeth, before we come to the end of our time together, I just wanted to first find out, is there anything that we maybe didn't cover? Is anything that I forgot to ask you or anything that I didn't know to ask you that you might want to share with the people listening?
No, we covered a lot of good stuff. I feel like I shared some random stuff too. So yay. I loved our conversation.
Oh, yay. Good. And then I know you are a public person. So tell us where we can find you either on social media, your website, and then of course I'll link to all of these things in our episode as well.
Sure. I'm pretty easy on all my social media sites, which I probably spend most of my time probably on Instagram the most is Anne Elizabeth RD. And that's probably Twitter. You can find me on Pinterest. I pin some crazy things if you ever want to check me out there. And that's also my website. So AnneElizabethRD.com. And then my podcast is on pretty much all your places you listen to podcasts, and that's Conversations with Anne Elizabeth.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of you and all the things that you do, as you know. I also want to learn a little bit about, to wrap up our conversation, and this is a pun intended, of course, of what's on your plate today. So what are you doing on this particular day as far as work, personal stuff, and then for sure I need to know what you're eating next.
Sure. So food, well, let's start with food because I love food.
Yes.
So I just got back from a walk before we had our podcast, and I'm going to have some farm fresh eggs. My friend Amanda brought me some fresh eggs from her parents' farm. So I'm so excited for that because they're so good. And then I'm going to have some avocado, and then I'm going to have some cherries because I'm obsessed with cherries and it's cherry season. So that's what's on my plate next after I talk with you. And then I'm headed to physical therapy because I hurt my back.
Yeah.
We had that chat. So I'm kind of repairing that. And then I'm off for a manicure and a pedicure because it's my day off today. So I'm excited.
That is so lovely. So you're doing a little bit of everything, but also there's some self-care involved, obviously, both in the physical therapy world and just the mani-pedi stuff, which I absolutely love.
Yes. I probably should log in and do some work, but I think I'm going to skip that today. So we're going to do it tomorrow. Yes.
Exactly. It can wait. Give yourself the proper day.
Yes.
Well, it has been an absolute joy and pleasure, as I knew it would be, to be able to have you on here. And again, I'm so grateful that you took the time to share your story with us. And hopefully there is somebody out there who picked up on some things that maybe helps them get to their next steps as well. And I wish you the absolute best, and not just today, the rest of the week, but, you know, forever and ever, of course. And I know we will keep in touch. But I really am so grateful. So thank you so much for spending time with me.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to spend time with you in person, because we are going to make that happen someday.
Indeed.
So, yes.
Indeed. Sooner than later, as soon as we're allowed to go back outside and play with each other.
That'll be so nice.
All right, my dear. Have a good one. Thank you again.
Thank you, Dina.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.